9:11 here on the record. You're with Madeline, and before the break we heard from People Taking Pictures with O Soul. Up top, Emily Woramara with Magic Woman Dancing. Now, it's not only the first-ish week of March, but it is also currently Sea Week, which runs from the 2nd to the 10th of March and looks to raise public awareness and appreciation of the sea. Sea Week also explores ocean conservation, with ocean waves a vast and reliable renewable energy source. Waves offer greater consistency and predictability than other renewable forms of energy, and increasing research is underway to learn more about it. Professor Richard Manasseh from Swinburne University's Fluid Dynamics team joins us to explain his team's work on the use of wave energy converters. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, Madeline.
Thanks for joining us today to learn a bit more about this. Firstly, how is energy extracted from a wave?
So there's a variety of different ways that have been invented over the last more than two centuries, Madeline. They've been coming up with different methods of extracting renewable energy from ocean waves. Most of these technologies utilize a principle called resonance. That's where whatever it is, could be like a giant pendulum mounted at the bottom of the sea, upside down pendulum, or it could be like a buoy that bobs up and down. Whatever the method is, it's arranged to have a particular so-called natural frequency, a certain number of, you know, bobs up and down, or a certain number of rocks to and fro of the pendulum, that is similar to the rhythm of the ocean swell, the number of beats per second of the ocean swell. When those two frequencies are similar, we get a large motion and a lot of energy is extracted from the ocean.
It's such a fascinating form of collecting energy, and I still can't get over the fact that you said we've been looking into this for two centuries.
I think the first patent was in 1799 in France. So people have been thinking about it for a very long time. But I think it's fair to say that these technologies have not been widespread, anything like all the other forms of renewable energy that we've come up with and we're all familiar with. And I think there's really two issues, which are both commercial issues, which have stopped wave energy from getting the prominence it deserves. Yeah. So you've got the first issue being that there are lots of small companies, all with their own patented invention for extracting renewable energy from ocean waves. And I mentioned some are like pendulums that tick and talk, and others are like buoys that bob up and down. Well, that's just two concepts. Last time I checked, there were something like 250 different companies around the world, all mostly small startup companies who are trying to achieve this. And that's been going for a long time. That wouldn't be an issue if it were not for the second issue, and that is that what these companies have to do is to build something huge and install it in the ocean. And the reason it has to be huge is that principle of resonance I just mentioned. Where we've got big energy and big ocean swell, we have very low frequencies. You might get, you know, one wave every 10 seconds or even longer. So it's a bit like tuning a giant musical instrument. When the engineers design this, they have to get its size correct, and that size is a big size. So you see, you've got this kind of commercial mismatch. You've got small companies trying to build something huge. And so what has happened up to recently is the companies have not done their job as thoroughly as they could have, and there's been a disaster and a trial that's broken or not worked. More recently, what tends to happen is they do get the engineering right. They've got enough capital to get the thing tested, and it's done a great job, and that's happened in Western Australia, actually. There's been some great developments in Western Australia. But then the finance isn't right because the company's too small. So what we've been doing is kind of turning the problem on its head and saying, okay, look, what do these technologies do that other forms of renewable energy don't do. And that is that they extract energy from waves. And that's energy which, in some cases, can be damaging if it causes coastal erosion or other issues to ports, harbours, and so on, or places where you've got coastal flooding, for example, due to waves.
Yeah, definitely. And my understanding is that that is the focus of your research in regards to beach erosion. Would we be able to talk a little bit more about that? You know, your team has discovered a method for determining the layout of a farm of machines, which is kind of optimised to reduce beach erosion. Where would these farms be located?
So it's very location-specific, Madeline, and each and every beach is an individual, just like all of us in some way. So you would really need to look at the circumstances of each location. We'd have to put the machine some distance offshore, some kilometres offshore, and it depends on the needs of the local community. That's really what has to be paramount. There are types of machines which poke above the water. You may not want that, for example, in a region where the aesthetics of the coastline need to be preserved. So where you put them would depend on the local circumstance. What we've been doing is looking at where you would put the machines relative to one another to achieve the desired effect. And, you know, we've got good partners at the University of Adelaide, University of New South Wales, and we work with Port Authority in Western Australia, where you are, and also local government in Victoria. And what we have been doing is trying to figure out this relative location of one machine to another to maximise the coastal protection effect. In other words, to maximise the sand on the beach, to minimise the rate with which sand is removed from the beach.
So how does that work exactly in regards to beach erosion? We've spoken on how kind of the energy is collected from the wave converters, but in regards to beach erosion, what does that have to do with the sand and the coastline?
Right, so it's a good question. Where you've got waves causing beaches to erode, my colleagues who are the experts on this over in the University of New South Wales say that you've got wave height matters. So the higher the waves are, the more energy is put into the water, and it tends to go into currents which are generated by the waves. We've all heard of the rip current. Well, that's just one form of a current generated by waves, and these currents move sand, and that's a natural process. It also depends on how the wave height changes with distance. It can depend on how the wave height changes with distance parallel to the beach, as well as in the direction at right angles to the beach. So these factors, the height of the waves and how the height of the waves changes with distance, both play into the generation of currents by waves, which in turn move sand. Okay, so you can get circumstances where you've got buildings, infrastructure, homes close to the beach, and the fact that this process is occurring naturally is no longer somehow acceptable to the people who live there, and that's understandable. And so the traditional way of controlling it is you build a wall, right? Put rocks in the ocean or concrete or something like that. And that absolutely does work. The issue then is that once you've got the wall there, it's a permanent feature, and the marine ecosystem on the other side of the wall, on the land side of the wall, is permanently altered. And you may, in fact, lose the beach up to where the wall is. You may protect the homes behind there. So with the layout I mentioned of the farm of wave energy converters, these are individual machines. Think of something like an array of wind turbines, although there's no blades involved. And they would extract energy from the waves, they would convert it to electricity, so there would be less wave energy impacting the shore and therefore reduced erosion.
That's such a fascinating thing that we've been able to discover that just by, you know, changing the layout and implementing these wave converters. And, you know, speaking about erosion to the coastline, what will the use of wave energy converters mean for the future of coastlines?
I think it's going to be very location dependent. We're hoping that it could be a significant tool that people use, so that when they start looking at coastal erosion issues and other coastal hazard issues, they don't just reach for the let's build a wall solution. In some cases, that is the solution. Now, where you've got your major infrastructure, ports, harbours, absolutely. That's the standard practice. People have been building walls for thousands of years. They work, as I said. But in other cases, particularly in Australia, where we've got people whose homes have been built along sand dunes, that's happened certainly in southwest Victoria, where I'm a bit more familiar, but I guess it's happened in WA as well. People built homes along sand dunes. What are we going to do? You know, do we just accept that those homes are going to go, or do we think of interventions which aren't as hard as a rock wall, but do have the opportunity to control the waves? And I think control is the point we'd like people to understand, that you don't need to have the machines turned on all the time. Right? They are machines. So you can't turn a wall on or off, but you can have these machines, or some of them, turned on and turned off at different times. So, for example, one location we're looking at in Victoria, it's very popular with surfers. Like the waves exactly as they are, and absolutely, that's the way it should be. So one of the strategies we're looking at is we put machines offshore, they're underwater, you can't see them, they only operate at night. People don't usually go surfing at night, right?
No.
And so then they draw energy from the waves at night, and that helps to mitigate the erosion. Plus, sometimes the price of electricity is the highest in the early evening, so maybe it may be economical to do it that way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've spoken about the research that's going on in Australia with these converters, and of course we are so lucky here to be blessed with such a beautiful and expansive coastline. Are we the first country to trial these converters? Is there anywhere else in the world that this is happening?
No, it's been trialled very, very many other parts of the world. Japan, in the UK, off the coast of Spain, in Portugal, California, Oregon, and so on. But I think this concept of kind of turning the problem on its head, as I mentioned, and looking at it first and foremost as a coastal protection measure that also generates electricity, I think we're the first to look at it in the level of detail we are. And certainly the first to figure out a method of optimising, as we say, the layout of the machines specifically for this aim. So we want to be able to say, you want to protect the coast, this is where you put your machines, this is what type of machines you need to use.
Yeah, definitely. I also feel it would be amiss for us not to talk about, of course, you know, we've spoken about, you know, the effects of humans for this one, but also do the converters affect sea life?
That's a very good question, Madeline, and it's one we've been interested in for many years. Personally, I think that there should be some effect on the seabed. And some evidence is there from those machines which are being put on sandy seabeds that the sand is stirred around immediately around the machine. Now, that of itself may not be such an issue. I think it may be more of an issue if they're put on rocky seabeds. And we've got very interesting potential to study that. Where you've got fisheries that depend on things like shellfish, if we put machines there over the long term, are they going to alter the currents in the vicinity, which may alter where the larvae of these shellfish get distributed? So there could be these effects, and we cannot deny that. In fact, we should try and investigate it more thoroughly. The other aspect, of course, is that you put machines in the ocean and they will have very soon marine life growing all over them. So So some of them turn into little artificial reefs quite quickly. So there's pros and there's cons, but we need to understand all the details of how they work before we go down the track of large-scale farms.
Yeah, of course. A very important thing to look into. Now, just before we let you go, one last question. Australia is, of course, known for its beach culture, especially, you know, in the summer months. Will these wave energy converters affect beach culture in any way?
Again, a very good question. And I think I mentioned earlier that we should try to work in these machines with our lifestyle. And it's not just a case of lifestyle either. Let's not forget that people going to the beach brings revenue to those beach areas, and people's livelihoods also depend on people going surfing and going to the beach. So there's the dollar value there as well as the aesthetic value. So we think it should be possible to calculate how to operate them such that during the daytime, when people want to see unadulterated waves, and they should be able to see that. And the machines would operate full bore only at night to extract energy then. It really comes down to finance and economics. And I think we're very interested in extending our project into that domain. We've already started to, in some small way, to look at, you know, can we operate it economically such that the beach, from the point of view of the beachgoer, looks the same, but of course doesn't disappear due to erosion.
Yeah, of course. We definitely don't want our beautiful coastlines disappearing anytime soon. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today, Richard.
Thank you so much for having me, Madeline.
That was Professor Richard Manasseh from Swinburne University having a bit of a chat with us about wave energy converters. It is Sea Week at the moment, which is why we're having this ocean-related chat. Sea Week runs from the 2nd to the 10th of March, and we're just looking to raise public awareness and appreciation of the sea.